They gave us a printout of what was wrong with her from the internet. It's the R word.
Whoa. They did not.
Yeah. Was because of that brain injury. Mm. Just take her home and enjoy her because we really don't know how much time you're going to have. Finally, it was like, I just have to like embrace like this is the way it's going to be. We couldn't have taken care of her without our nurses. I was preparing for Grace to die from day one. She was gone. And I think it was so surreal that I'm proud of is that I gave her the best life I possibly could.
Do you feel her still?
It feels good when people talk about her. And when I think at first that this diagnosis is the worst thing. And gosh, it's just the best thing that ever happened to me.
The most important factor to a healthy well-being is feeling connected. Welcome to From There to Here. A safe place where we will explore some of life's adventures so that you do not feel alone.
Okay, we are recording now. We're a little scatterbrained in the studio this morning. Or this room. What do we call it?
I think we should call it a studio.
Okay.
Sounds more
professional.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, you are listening. You are listening to From There to Here with Shannon and Jess. And let's start off with Jess's heart lens. What is bringing you joy? How are you loving your life?
Oh, how am I loving my... I wasn't going to say something else, but because you asked it that way today, okay. I just am loving my life right now. Like, I just feel so balanced in how I get to have time with my friends and time with my family and time with Jude, and he goes to school, and it's just, I'm really grateful for life balance right now. And I'm like, no, I know that that is not permanent and it won't always feel like that.
Yeah.
And I am just grateful for it right now because I know it won't always feel like
this. Especially when Shannon comes up with another idea that I drag you into.
Oh, yes. Good Lord. Do you have one?
Thousands.
Oh, okay.
Running
through
my head all the time.
Like you were going to present one to me soon. And I'm like, oh my God, don't do that.
No, not today.
Yeah. I won't. And I mean, I'm not like all the time perfectly balanced and not feeling like I'm running around with my head cut off, but I'm just saying like, overall, I'm appreciating the balance I have in my life right now.
Good.
What's in your heart lens?
Not that.
Okay.
Not balance. But I don't remember what episode it was that we talked about like change and how change is hard. Mm-hmm. Yes, change is hard. But and it's not that I want to go back into a classroom at any time and be a teacher anytime soon again. Mm-hmm. But
well, you are a teacher.
Okay.
Just
but
so you know.
That's not my heart lens. Okay. Reeling her back in. Just the change of like the new job. It's been a couple of years now and it just continues to like things continue to happen to affirm that like I made the right decision. I just in one of the many jobs that I have now, Jess and I coach new special education teachers. Mm-hmm. And in a discussion we were having the other day, it was just very affirming that I am glad that I am not in that role anymore.
That you're not teaching the littles.
Yes. And I just volunteered teachers. In the kids in the boys classroom. Oh, and I was like, this is why I don't do this anymore. Like, so lots of things
I'm surprised
that keep popping
you,
up.
You don't like it. Like, it sounds like at all anymore.
I don't know that I could go back to being like a classroom, like in a classroom.
I don't think I could
all
either.
The time.
Yeah, I hear you on that. But I love, like, I do mindfulness club and I teach this group of kids, but it's.
Yeah,
you
I wouldn't
know,
want to do that either.
It's only for 45 minutes.
I don't.
It's like, and I feel like.
I was with the boys' classroom for 2 hours yesterday. I was like, no.
45 minutes is the perfect amount for me. But I did say to my parents this week, like, I'm so grateful that I don't do what I do anymore because it's a lot to work with kids that have some what could be called reasonable behaviors. So some people call them challenging behaviors, right? But that is a lot to.
Well, and let's just talk
carry
about like
with you all day long and then have to come home and then be with a toddler.
Yeah.
Like I just that would be hard. Yeah. So,
and just ironically that we're talking about this, our guest today is a teacher and she is in the classroom. But like,
it is ironic that we're doing this.
It is so interesting to me after I got out of that profession, how that is like a whole new world. Like teaching is just like their own culture.
It's
and like
hard.
The schedule is kind of silly and like,
it's exhausting.
Yeah, it's exhausting.
And the amount of expectation that you have, it's like from the it's from the state, it's from the superintendent, it's from the principal, it's from your team leader,
the class,
it's from the teacher, it's
the parents,
kids, the parents. It's like there's so much, and I know other people are probably like, oh, other jobs have that too, and like, no,
it's
there's just
so,
more in teaching, I swear,
and you only get. You only get 2 weeks off, maybe a couple days for Thanksgiving. You do not get a whole summer off, people. That is just not how it
not
works.
True.
Not
no.
true.
No. All
it
right.
is just so, it's such a different world to be a teacher. But teacher that we have in our studio, we have Amanda with us today. Amanda, what's in your heartland?
This is an easy one for me today because... So yesterday we were able to donate Grace's sleep safe bed.
Yep.
So
yes, I saw
her bed. We had to fight for insurance to get her bed. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't even cover it. We paid finally just said we'll pay for half of it. That was when she was like, I think I said one, but it might have been more when she was three. So
may
like
I ask
three.
You how much it was?
I don't even remember. Okay.
Thousands.
It was thousands. Yeah. It's like a hospital bed that doesn't look like a hospital bed.
Yeah.
You know? So we didn't want anything hospital
of
more
course.
Than we needed to in her room. But one of the biggest things was to be able to donate that bed or gift it to someone else. And through like Facebook and trying to find nurses at one point, I met a family who lives right in McFarland, like down the street from us. And so after Grace passed, we gave them a lot of her supplies because this little guy has a trach also. So I never threw anything away. And then it was really important for me to give that bed to somebody else. So even though it was so hard to like take that out of her room, I know it's going right down the street and this little boy is getting it. So like that was super.
That
like,
is beautiful.
Great that we could share that.
And then I know you guys worked with someone to do that. Logan's. Can you say the
Logan's name? Heart and Smiles.
They do some amazing work.
Yeah.
Here in
so
the Madison
they,
area.
We first met them, through the hospital, probably the founder of it is Joe Hare, whose son actually passed away also coming up on, like, I think he said 22 years.
Wow.
But we needed a ramp. So they built a ramp for us. That was the first thing they did for us. And then when I was trying to figure out how are we going to get this electric bed, like it can't just be moved anyway.
Oh,
how are we
sure.
going to get this to this family? Then I saw on his Facebook page that they do some of that. So I reached out and of course, you know, they were so great. And it just said, you know, if you're not ready the day that we come out, we don't have to do it that day. Just when you're ready.
They were very empathetic about it. Then.
Yep. And so there was actually some college students who came out and helped with it. And Joe wanted me to share Grace's story with them so they could kind of understand, you know, where this is coming from, this bed and this gift that's going to this new family. And so being a part of that and being able to do that, I don't know, just in that way of giving and sharing Grace's story made it a lot easier. So it was a lot easier than I thought it was going to be, I guess. So I'm thankful for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Aww. Well, that is a beautiful heartland. Yes. Thank you for sharing.
Yes.
Speaking of Grace, that's what this whole episode is going to be about. Your amazing Grace. Do we want to start with just...
Do we have any heartlands from...
Oh, we do. Gosh, man. I am seriously out of... the game here.
<It's> okay.
Yes. Yes. Where is this Heartlands from? Not Facebook, is it? Sarah's Heartlands.
Sarah. Hi, Sarah. She is actually a UW student of mine.
And mine.
Yes. And she shared her Heartlands at the end of her assignment she had to submit to me.
That's where this comes from.
Yeah. So she submitted a video assignment. And she was like, oh, at the end, wait, I forgot my Heartlands.
Oh.
She said, the sun is out and that makes me happy. Thank you, Sarah, for sharing your Heartlands.
if you want to share your personal heart lens with us and you are not one of our UW Whitewater students, you'll have to leave a comment on Facebook or Instagram, head on over to TikTok, or email us at podcastfromthere2here@gmail.com. And we'll read those during upcoming episodes.
Like Shannon has said, and you already heard
she jumped to the gun
here with us. She jumped the gun. She was so excited because we had to talk about, I think, is it fair to say, Amanda, our Amazing Grace? She isn't just yours.
Yeah.
She, you can share her.
Yes, I'm definitely, I think that was what her life was. She, yeah, she was shared with everybody, and she's all of our Amazing Grace. And mm-hmm. if you met Grace, then you know how much she's changed everybody's life.
Absolutely.
So yes, definitely our Amazing Grace. Yes.
Grace. Well, Amanda is here with us today to not only share the story of Grace, but also how Grace's story continues and her light continues to shine as Grace has passed away.
Yes.
So to start, I think it makes sense to go way back to
when?
The beginning, right? and just talk about your pregnancy and kind of how you found out about what was going on with Grace.
Yeah, the beginning.
The beginning
was long ago.
Of it all.
So at the beginning, you know, I guess you just think you're going to start a family and it's going to be mm-hmm. easy, which we all know it's not.
Especially those of us in this room.
Right. So we decided that we wanted to have kids fairly after we got married. And so I got pregnant very early, like very soon mm-hmm. after. And at 8 weeks, I had a miscarriage. Mm-hmm. We didn't really think anything of it. It was sure. just, you know, we were devastated and mm-hmm. so upset. And, but then realized that's more common than not. And so mm-hmm. they didn't really look into anything because it's yeah. just a common thing that happens.
It's like, is it 1 in 4 pregnancies result in miscarriage? Like the statistic was alarming to
yes.
me.
Yeah. yeah. So, you know, shortly after that, we decided, of course, we're going to try again. And so we did. And I got pregnant again. And, you know, we kind of were cautious because like 8 weeks is when that happened. Mm-hmm. But that continued on. And everything was going fine in the pregnancy. The first kind of thing that started happening was the baby was always small. Every time mm-hmm. I went in, they were like, wow, you're measuring really small. And my ultrasounds were, you're measuring really small. And so then they diagnosed me or her with intrauterine growth restriction, mm-hmm. Which just means you have a small baby, really. And then...
So nothing that you need to be super alarmed about.
No. Mm-mm.
Okay.
And how far along were you at that time?
It was pretty early on because I was always yeah. just small throughout my pregnancy. Okay. Just the measurements, like even in the doctor's office, were always small.
Okay.
One of the first ultrasounds we had, they brought somebody else in and they thought they saw a hole in her heart.
Oh, okay.
Besides being small.
Did you have to have additional imaging done
yes.
after? Yep. I only know to even ask that because we just interviewed another mother who had a child with a hole in her heart.
Yes. So this was done at St. Mary's in Madison. And then after that, you know, they brought the doctor in. Mm-hmm. They're like, we think the baby has a hole in her heart. You know, we should look into this. And so that was like the next thing. So now we have a small baby, then there's a hole in her heart. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, I just had this miscarriage a few months back.
Right.
Yeah. And so, you know, they said, we're going to send you to Children's of Milwaukee. We want them to take a look. So Children's of Milwaukee did an ultrasound and I had to wait for it, of course. So that whole like
time.
Waiting process.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Then when we got the results from that, they're like, no, we don't think she has a hole in her heart. It might just been like a shadow or something. Hmm. Like, oh, okay. So it's fine.
She's yeah.
fine. But, you know, come to find out after she's born, she really did have a hole in her heart.
Mm-hmm.
So then that was the next thing. But then, you know, oh, good. You know, she's healthy. And so we continued to see now a high-risk doctor just from the small baby. And mm-hmm. one of the times we went in, they said, you know, maybe we should just do, oh, I also had some bleeding. So it was early on at my grandpa's, like visitation.
Yeah.
We went out to eat, tons of blood gushing.
Oh my God.
You were so terrifying. I thought for sure I was having a miscarriage.
Yeah.
I went into the hospital. There's her little body moving all around, kicking in for the ultrasound, mm-hmm. and she was strong. And
yeah.
So then I was put on bed rest for that too.
Because of the blood.
Yeah. And it was something with the placenta. It was like a tear in the placenta. Eventually that all healed and that had nothing to do with Grace or her syndrome or anything.
Sure, yeah.
It was just kind of a rare thing that went along with that. So that was just another complication. Then by the end, they were like, you know, there's enough going on that maybe we want to do an amniocentesis and just, you know, mm-hmm. put your mind at ease because this whole thing had been stressful. So when we went in the day of the amniocentesis, they did the ultrasound. They're like, you have barely any amniotic fluid. Like there's barely any, like we haven't.
How far along were you at that point?
So, I think I maybe had a month left. So it might've been like 8 months.
Yeah.
So we did the amniocentesis because we wanted to get that done. But then I was admitted to the hospital and then I wasn't technically on bed rest, but I needed to be monitored like two or three times a day for her heart rate.
Mm-hmm. But still nothing was.
Still nothing something's wrong.
Okay.
I guess in the back of my head, maybe I was a little concerned, like this isn't normal.
Sure.
But I kept like having hope because everything's
being your
okay.
first pregnancy full term, you just probably didn't have any idea either.
Right. And at that time, I was a teacher, Bo was a teacher. And so, you know, I was off of work. I think the first test for the amniocentesis came back pretty quickly, 48 hours maybe. And they came in or they just called and said, you know, everything looks great. Everything came back for, you know, most common diagnosis, Down syndrome, things like that are more common. So it looks like you have a healthy baby girl. It's 100% a baby girl now, we know. And because I feel like that was my biggest concern. Like they said it was a girl, but what if I bought this stuff and it's not a girl? And
yeah.
Like such a dumb concern looking back, right?
Yeah.
So then it took about two weeks, a week and a half. And it was one morning early and the phone rang in the hospital. Mm-hmm. And it was the doctor saying, is your husband there with you? And I said, well, yeah. And they're like, well, we have some results and we want to come down and share them with you. We just wanted him to be there. So now,
what did that
like results
feel?
Yeah. From what?
So we knew something was wrong from the amniocentesis because the first results we got were like the preliminary results.
Okay,
the second results, they weren't even concerned about because these are more very rare things that could possibly happen to the baby or be wrong with the baby. So they were really thinking everything was fine. So these were the other results that came back.
What did that feel like knowing they were coming to tell you something?
Well,
were you just terrified?
Yeah, we were scared, but we knew something was wrong.
Okay.
I feel like I got out my baby books at that point and I looked at all of the things in the books, like what could be wrong with her. And then it seemed like it was forever till they got down there. And the high-risk doctor walked in and our nurse was there who had been taking good care of me. And then a genetics counselor who I don't know if we had met her at that time, actually. I don't think so. So a genetics counselor came in. They sat down. They gave us a printout of what was wrong with her from the internet because they didn't have anything.
From the internet?
From the internet.
They didn't.
They hadn't
so
heard
rare.
Of it. Right.
Did they say, how do they have the
so
name of it?
They knew it was called Emanuel syndrome.
Okay.
They started listing all the things that were going to be wrong and they used the R word.
Whoa. They did not.
Yeah. But you have to remember, like back then in medical terms.
Right.
That was something they used. And after I heard that, like, I think my whole brain
back then,
just
this
turned
isn't
off.
Back, this isn't the
I know, it's like
1300.
13 years ago, but they still use that in medical language. So I think after that, my brain turned off and I was kind of all of a blur.
Yeah.
So the other thing that I didn't say was before her diagnosis, she was breech. So we were planning like that week to have a C-section to have her because she was breech also.
So you are told how many days before the C-section that there are complications?
So she was breech for a long time.
Okay.
Then we were told that about her diagnosis. At that point though, she the doctors really didn't know if she was going to be born alive. And it really turned to taking care of me more than, and my well-being and like physically and mentally.
Okay.
That's what I feel like than the baby at that point. Because
you're like pretty much done being pregnant here.
Right. Right. So
why were they concerned she wouldn't be alive when she was born? Like,
well, there's just not so much information out there yet about Emanuel syndrome.
Okay.
They didn't know about Emanuel syndrome. So they really, they just didn't know.
So how many weeks now until Grace is born?
So 2 weeks went by.
So you have 2 weeks to process this.
Yeah. So I didn't have a C-section though. So that was the whole other thing. When I said, like, they kind of turned it around and said, you know, focusing on me, they said, you know, she is going to be really small. She's going to be a small baby. And we think that it's in the best interest of you and your body, and that we think you can deliver her breech. And so that was the point.
Why?
I really don't think the doctors knew. I really didn't think, I think they thought she wasn't going to be born alive. And I think they thought, like, if I had a C-section now, emotionally, I'm going through the death of my child and I'm going through a C-section. Looking back, that's the only thing I can think.
Yeah.
Leading up to that. So we still had about a month, I think, until her due date. She came 2 weeks early.
Did you tell people at that point?
So the only people, so they sent us home from the hospital at that same day.
Because, even though
because I think they just really, I don't know. I just, and I'm just listening to the doctors, you know, at this point.
So hard.
And it's my first baby. So we went home and it was just like a blur. Our family knew.
Mm-hmm. Are you also planning for her to be born, like stillborn?
I was hopeful she would be born alive. But so then leading up to this, what we had to do is we had to meet with the neonatal team. We had a meeting with the doctors, with my sister-in-law came, the grandparents came, obviously me and Bo, and we had to make decisions. And at that point, we made the decision that if she was born not breathing, we didn't want her resuscitated.
Sure.
Because of what we knew, and we didn't want her to live a life like with struggles. And that was just one of the hardest decisions that we made.
Right.
I also chose not to be monitored during the rest of my pregnancy and during the birth, because I did not, I don't think I could have handled delivering a baby already knowing she had passed.
Right.
Yeah.
So that was our, you know, I think then my biggest concern was I'm going to get into the hospital and they're not going to know the plan and I'm going to have to explain this. And it was already hard enough to, you know.
Yeah. Did you go back to work?
No. So actually, this was in the summer that she was diagnosed. And since I'm a teacher, I didn't. But it was coming up. She was born September 7th. So this was coming up, like starting to get ready to go back to school.
That's a very busy time.
Very busy. And it feels like such an important time.
Right. And the plan was I was going to go back to work until she was born. I was going to start the school year. But knowing her diagnosis, it was so hard to even go out in public at that time because people were all, oh, how exciting, you're having a baby.
Yeah, and, oh, my God.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And did you tell people then?
Yeah. Like, I mean, I think my work colleagues knew. Sure. I went into work one time, I think, before, you know, just to see them. And I remember, like, I walked in the door and everybody was already there.
Yeah.
It was just... So I think it was just such a shock, you know. Yeah. And
did you have a baby shower prior to the diagnosis?
So I had a baby shower with my with both side of the family. Mm-hmm. It might have just been one. Then school was planning a baby shower for me, and I canceled that.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because I don't need to be getting gifts if I have to like get rid of the gifts.
Sure.
Yeah.
So that. Then they ended up doing something still later on.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Because Grace comes and she's...
Right. So yeah. So breathing. Then she comes and I'll never...
And was she breathing right away?
Or yes. Okay. Yep. So I went into labor and, you know, the nurses hooked me up to machines and I didn't say anything right away, but her heart was beating. And so I'm like, oh, thank God. Yes. And then she walked over and she said, okay, we're just going to take these off. Like, no big deal. She must have obviously read the notes.
Okay.
So I had her breech. It was like the easiest birth of all of mine. Oh. And
because she was so small,
because she was 5 pounds, 14 yeah. ounces.
That's still
easiest recovery
baby. Yeah. Like 5 pounds isn't.
Yeah. Right. That's still. Yeah. Yeah.
So she came and
she was crying.
Not immediately, but like some babies don't. And right. yeah. the second I saw her, I'm like, please, please just cry. Please be able to breathe. Mm-hmm. And she did. I got to hold her for like a short minute, but mm-hmm. then I remember just telling him, just take her, please just take her and make sure she's okay. And so then yeah. at that point, you know, our decision that we had to make before was void. And
Grace always going to be her name?
Yep. Her name was going to be Grace before we had her diagnosis.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Of course it was.
I know. It's just like, of course.
Yep. Her dad thought of that name. Oh. And I was like, really? Like, let's say Grace. Like, I don't know. And then and then it was like, oh my God, it couldn't be more perfect.
Yeah. This is her name. This is her name. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Did you do a lot of research leading up to labor, like about Emanuel syndrome?
When we got home, I did do a little bit, but then realized like I need to not. I remember like being so upset. I remember sitting in her room and her nursery was all set. And, you know, I always wanted a little girl and mm-hmm. this is not. You know, as you go through a grieving process, I'm losing my idea of what I thought my little girl was going to be. And
have you ever read that Welcome to Holland?
Yes. Yeah. That was given to me.
Yeah.
And like, that.
How do you feel about that? And I'm going to share that on our social media so our listeners.
There are a lot of this. Parents with kids with special needs there have different opinions on it. Yeah. I thought it was comforting and I thought it made a lot of sense to me. Other people don't like it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was, you know, a great poem to read. But I remember being like standing at the top of my steps and like, I have no control over this. And I just need to like give it to God and say, I didn't know what to pray for. Like, do I pray that she's going to be okay and that she's going to have all these challenges in her life? Or do I pray that God takes her and she goes to heaven and never has to live in pain? Like, what do I pray for? And so I'm like, you know,
what did you pray for?
I said, I'm giving this to you, God, and whatever
you
happens
know what's
is
best.
Right. Yeah. Because I just realized I have no control.
Trust.
Yeah.
What was going to happen.
But the moment she took her first breath, then I was like, please God, let her just let her be okay.
Yes.
Even though I knew she wasn't going to be okay.
But you knew okay with that.
Yes. I knew that. Yeah. I had no idea what was coming for me.
So let's kind of jump ahead to what is Emanuel syndrome?
Yes,
what does that look like for Grace and your family? What was ahead for you?
So it is super rare. Like, Emanuel syndrome is cognitive developmental disabilities along with a lot of health issues.
Would it be fair to say it? Like medically complex.
Very medically complex. Yes. And it's different. Like, Grace is very different kid with Emanuel syndrome than a lot of other kids. And I can talk more about why that is in a minute. But so that's what Emanuel syndrome is. Mm-hmm.
Is it a chromosome?
Yes.
Okay.
So it's a chromosome
deletion, or?
So I have a balanced translocation. So 11 and 22.
We just learned about this.
Yeah.
In a previous episode about translocation.
Yep. Yeah. So a chromosome 11, 22, like for me, they're just switched. It makes no big deal.
Because they're balanced.
Right. They're balanced. But for Grace's, she had unbalanced, which is Emanuel syndrome of 11 and 22. So I passed this on to her.
You only found out about this after Grace was born.
Exactly. Then we had testing done to see like who was the carrier for this. Not
Do
that
you,
it mattered.
Like, have feelings about that?
I don't know. You know, I don't know that I ever felt guilty about it. Mm-hmm. I think I knew that I had no idea. And even if I did have an idea, I'm kind of thankful I didn't know.
Sure.
Because there are people who do know, and then they have to decide, like, what are you going to do? They go through, you know, fertility things or they try to have a baby on their own. Or I didn't have, I just went in blindly and I guess I'm thankful for that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so then I found out I was the person who had this translocation, which is concerning because I always wanted to have Bo and I always talked about having three kids. Like we right. always, that mm-hmm. was always like our plan. And so then after having Grace, it's like, are we ever going to be able to have more kids? But Emanuel syndrome is so rare that there are really only like 1,000 documented cases between documentation mm-hmm. and like our internet group.
Okay. 1,000 in the universe.
Yes. Yes.
In the entire
universe. And when Grace was born, they told me 200. So it's like very rare.
Yeah.
So that's why it didn't come show up right away.
Yeah.
But you know, then you worry about I'm the one who's the carrier and I want to have more babies and mm-hmm. you know, this is kind of jumping ahead, but we decided like, we're just going to try mm-hmm. and hope. And we had two healthy boys. We had tests.
Did you do testing? Yeah.
Well, actually, so I had my miscarriage. I had Grace. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Then we tried for another one. I had another miscarriage mm-hmm. and it was a little girl. We did find mm-hmm. out about that one, mm-hmm. But did not have Emanuel syndrome. It was something else. I can't remember what it was. Then I had Brady.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. We did have testing done at 11 weeks. I had a CVS testing done, which is like a amniocentesis.
Okay.
But so we knew at 11 weeks that he was a healthy baby boy and that he is not a carrier.
Okay. Not a carrier.
Not a carrier.
And what would you have done if he was? Like, is that
if he has a man? I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if we would have continued the pregnancy sure. or not.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's fair.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
you already mm-hmm. had Grace.
Right.
Yeah. yeah. And right. you already knew some of the hardships that she was living with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to know to bring another baby in to feel that way.
Right.
That would be tricky.
It would yeah. be hard. Yeah.
Is there an increase of girls that carry this than boys?
No, I don't think so. No.
Because then you had a third baby.
Yep. So then after Brady, they're all 3 years apart. So then 3 more years went by mm-hmm. and I got pregnant again. This time it was ectopic pregnancy. So then that had to be, we had to stop that,
and
obviously.
You didn't know if it was Emanuel syndrome.
No.
They wouldn't mm-mm. know. Okay.
Then I got pregnant with Finley and we had testing done and he is a healthy baby boy. Mm-hmm. No translocation. So they both can go on to have healthy babies. And so
Grace is just amazing. Yeah. She's yeah.
Yep.
So what are some of the complications that Grace came with?
So the very first one when she was in the NICU was really eating. She just was struggling with like the suck, swallow, chew mm-hmm. all, not chew, but suck, swallow mm-hmm. reflex. Mm-hmm. She just couldn't get that together. They tried different bottles, they tried different things. Mm-hmm. So she had an NG tube placed in her nose to feed her. That was one of the first ones. But so at that point, she also had a really small jaw, mm-hmm. which they thought at that time that if we had a mandibular distraction, which is lengthening the jaw, mm-hmm. would bring it into a position where she could possibly then eat and swallow mm-hmm. and safely. And that she, you know, eventually wouldn't need a G-tube and all of those things.
So that's why they didn't do a G-tube right away.
Right. They also were really worried because her jaw was so small that if she was to get sick, mm-hmm. that her airway would close off. So that more than the eating part of it and we have to do this because if she can't breathe, like obviously that's not good. So she was transferred at 2 weeks old to the Children's Hospital in Madison, and we decided to do this mandibular distraction surgery. So pretty much as they go in, they like kind of cut the jaw and put screws in, and then what happens is the screws are turned to lengthen the jaw. Then you wait a few days, more bone grows, it gets longer. During that surgery, Grace coded, and they got her back.
She was 2 weeks old.
2 weeks old, yeah.
And at that time, did you have a do not resuscitate?
No, we didn't. We didn't have do not resuscitate because at this point, like that was all void and she's here. And
yeah.
Right.
And can you at that point anymore have a do not resuscitate?
I don't know. They probably would have. I think they gave us that option, but she was here and we were right. Yeah. Her whole rest of her life.
Yeah.
That she always had like
resuscitate.
Do everything.
Yep. Yes.
So they came in, they said, you know, she's in recovery. You can come see her. And the doctor started like trying to explain himself right away. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't know what happened. She, all of a sudden we looked and she was blue, and it was towards the end of the surgery, and we had to resuscitate her. And so we have to like look into this. We think it maybe was her heart, like blood was shunting over wrong. And it was just none of it made sense to me.
Yeah.
So at that point she went, she had brain damage because of that. Because of that surgery, yes.
Oh. That first one at 2 weeks
old. 2 weeks old.
Because I know Grace. Right. And that happened again later, didn't it? That she coded and...
She did not code and need to be resuscitated. She had some like other things that happened. But so her brain damage, also kidney failure, which... Mm-hmm. Is something the brain that she damage then had to do. The resuscitation, the code, she took a hit to her kidneys and her brain. So,
Do you know how long she was? I don't know.
See, none of it made sense. And then during rounds, stuff started getting put together. And I'll never forget her kidney doctor at rounds one time said, "I want to know what happened in that operating room."
Oh my gosh.
So we're pretty sure it was a doctor error that happened.
Is there a way to kind of tease out what is Emanuel syndrome and what is due to this surgery?
At that point, we actually saw a lawyer eventually about this, and we just couldn't do anything about it really because part of it is we don't know what Grace can do because of Emanuel syndrome and because of the, I know now 100% that everything Grace was not able to do was because of that brain injury. Mm-hmm. All of the other kids with Emanuel syndrome, they can hold their head up.
Yep.
They can do things Grace couldn't do. I know in my heart that she couldn't because of that.
Yep.
Yeah. 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 So that led to a 2 week.
Do you have feelings about that still, kind of? Or
I mean, I don't know. I guess there was so much going on. I don't know if I was ever really upset at the doctors. I mean, it was frustrating. Sometimes I was like, have feelings about like, if this never would have happened, if we never did this surgery, we would have.
A different
little girl.
Yeah.
But then I also think if we didn't do this surgery, maybe she wouldn't be with us because she wouldn't have been able to breathe.
You just never know.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, there was other options and I don't know that we were given those options, like put a trach in her.
Okay.
I feel like trachs right now are more common with kids and back then.
Yeah. 13 years ago.
You know, it was like, let's fix this so she doesn't have to have a trach. I mean, when you have a trach, there's a lot of things. It's stressful. There's a lot of things you have to do. So I think in their heart of hearts, they were trying to prevent that for Grace and us.
So it was easier.
It was, you know, the surgery will fix it is what we thought.
Should they have been doing a little bit more due diligence to look into her heart before doing the surgery?
It wasn't her heart.
Her heart. Okay.
They were trying to find a reason, but the reason was somebody made an error.
Okay. Yeah. So this,
and nobody's ever said that.
Nothing to do with the hole in her heart.
No.
Okay.
Nothing. And nobody's ever
said
that.
I'm glad that you cleared that up because I assumed that.
No. Nobody's ever came out and said that to us, but the comments that doctors have made and how angry they were that this happened and all the complication leading up to that. I mean, then it took us 2 months. She was in the hospital for 2 months. She didn't come home till November. And we were trying to get her kidneys back. She was on dialysis. Mm. I mean, the kidney doctor's like, I don't know. When she finally came off dialysis and her kidneys started working again on their own, I mean, they were never normal.
I was going to say that was a constant struggle for Grace.
Right. They were never normal. And the day we left, our kidney doctor said, just take her home and enjoy her because we really don't know how much time you're going to have. And then so that's what we did.
And how many hospital stays did Grace have in her lifetime?
Like too many to count.
Yeah.
She was in the hospital so much. Like people knew us well.
Yeah. Like hundreds of days.
Though. Yes. Oh yes, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think our longest maybe was like 3 months, 3 months, 2 months. I don't know. 2 months, like right off the bat. Yeah, but then I think she had another one close to two or 3 months too.
Would it be fair to say like 10 to 25% of her life. Was that in hospitals and doctor's appointments?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, the first year was so stressful. We were at the doctor all of the time for all of the things and managing her medications. And
did you go back to work right away?
I went to back to work. We came home in she was born in September. We came home in November. I went back to work after Christmas break, I believe. So January, not to full-time teaching, but I came back as like a building sub where I just worked with wherever they needed. So I didn't have the extra stress of things teachers have to do.
Yes. All the things teachers have
to do. So I did go back to work.
And who was taking care of Grace when you were at work?
So we found somebody who was willing to learn how to do her tube feeds because then she needed a G tube anyway. And take care of her. So it was a lady near McFarland who did an in-home daycare and she watched her for a while. And then after that, Grace's grandma watched her for a while. And then she turned three and she started school.
From like, you need to go home and enjoy her as much as you can because we don't know how long she's going to live to she's three and going to school.
And at school would love school, thrive at school.
So, I mean, so much happened between, you know, the this and three. But, you know, we learned our new normal and we.
How long just, did that take?
I don't know. It was hard. I think she also had like cried all the time. She had like super colic. Her pediatrician called it like. All the time cried. When she came home, she still had like the screws in her jaw, even though they were done with the turning of the screws. It had to heal before they could take those out. After those came out, which I think she was like 3 months old, 2 months old, 3 months old. No, must have been 3 months because we were in the hospital for the first two. It seemed like she was more comfortable and was a little less.
I can't imagine like having screws in you and not being able to tell people. Get these out.
Well, and she can't. I mean, at that point, she was an infant and obviously couldn't tell us. But so it was hard. So the sleepless nights were really hard. The comparing Grace at that age to all these other babies that I saw that were at that age was really hard. Listening to people complain about simple things was really hard for me. I remember like being in the teacher's lounge and people were like, oh my gosh, like I have to take my son to practice and then we got to do this and this. I'm like, oh, I'd give anything to be able to do that.
My daughter to practice.
It's amazing how your perspective can just shift so greatly.
So I feel like that all that was hard for me. And I don't know when that changed, that I was okay with it all. It did. And I wasn't like that all of the time anymore, but it took a while. The first year was so hard. Maybe it was like the first year or two, you know, when I finally was like, I just have to like embrace, like, this is the way it's going to be. So
what about your, with your husband?
I mean, we were both under so much stress. You know, we just did the best we could. And sometimes like grandmas would come in and be like, here, well, you just need a break. Cause it was so stressful.
Thank goodness for grandmas.
It's not easy to just find a babysitter.
And you can't,
you can't just trust somebody to know what to do. Like there was a training process that would need to happen in order for Grace to be left with anybody. And so eventually you get home care nurses to help.
So, so, I'm trying to think of when that first started. We, probably early on, maybe when she was two or so, we started having like home care. They weren't nurses. They were more of like respite kind of, but we would train them. A lot of them had backgrounds in, they wanted to go into nursing. So like Grace, I feel like Grace taught them a lot and they've even said like, Grace, we learn more from Grace.
So many people.
Then we have our teachers, and I feel like teachers have learned more from Grace than, you know, so it's, that's always just continued. But so we brought in like just some respite care workers where we could finally just take a break. It was hard for me to leave the house though, because I just, it took me so long to be able to trust somebody and make sure they know exactly what to do.
Well, even like you have doctors that don't know what to do sometimes. How do you trust this right. person.
Like, right. Yeah. And that's a whole nother, you know, whole nother thing is like, we were constantly teaching the doctors about like Emanuel syndrome and, you know, that too. And we just learned mostly about Emanuel syndrome from other families online that we never met. So.
And kind of just living it with Grace and having
she taught
experiences
you.
happen, and then you would have to learn from those.
Right, right. So we did eventually switch over to nursing care when Grace got a trach. So when Grace was four, she went in for a surgery for a male rotation, which is her intestines were switched, and a Nissen, which is keeping, it's like wrapping the esophagus so that she can't aspirate and get pneumonia. She was getting pneumonia so much, which was keeping us in the hospital. So we went in for a surgery for those two things for a better quality of life. And I feel like every decision we've made for her was always like quality of life. Like how can we make her more comfortable? What can we do? So that day we went in, it's a day I will never forget. We were sitting in the room waiting for her, which I took her back. I always took her back. And then the do-do-do-do, like these chimes go off and it's code or it's, so this time it was anesthesiologist stat to OR, whatever. And I knew that was her room because when I went in, I left and I looked at the room number. So at that point,
you've done this before and you kind of know the drill now.
Right. So it wasn't code, but it was anesthesia stat. So now I'm panicking and eventually
then you don't know.
Right. We don't know what's happening in there. Eventually the doctor comes in and said, it took us like three anesthesiologists and it took us an hour and a half to even get her intubated in a stable environment. Like we can't, she's stable now. She is on the ventilator now, but we cannot do this surgery. Like I would only do it if she had a trach because she does not have a stable airway. And she's, and he's pretty much like one of these days, like if we can't get a breathing tube in her in a stable environment, if she stops breathing, no one is going to be able to get one in during an emergency situation. And at that point we're like, okay, well, we have to
Grace
have a trach.
Showing us we need a trach.
Are you just living with anticipatory grief this entire time? Like every time you go in or they send you home and say, just enjoy her.
I feel like looking back on it all, I've realized like how much stress I was under. And like, I don't think I realized it at that time, how much stress I was under and how like I think I was
like
always
you're just
in grief.
Like holding on or I don't know.
I think I was always exhausted. I was under so much stress, but I don't think at the time I knew that. I just kept doing
you
it.
Didn't
I kept
any different.
Exactly. I kept doing what Grace needed. Whatever she needed, that's what I was doing. And
you were Grace's mom.
So we ended up getting the trach. That was a life changer for her, for us. It was the best thing we have ever done for her. You know, we were dreading it. But her sleep got better. Her breathing got better. She was more comfortable. We actually went like a year without a hospital stay after her trach. But
so
with
she was healthier.
She was way healthier. So it was great. She ended up having the surgeries she needed. So that could have been a part of it too. But then coming home when you have a child with a trach, now you have a stable airway, but you always have, you have to be able to manage the airway, right? So now I have, we have nursing. We went through horrible experiences with nursing companies until we finally decided that we were going to do independent nursing. But then that was another thing on top of me. So, and at that point, you know, I don't care. I'm going to do what I need to do. But I was hiring the nurses. I was training the nurses. We actually had some respite care workers who at that point had graduated and were nurses. They came in and they helped us. But even finding nursing care was so hard.
And you found some like family through people that
so
you love dearly.
So the nurses finally, when we started independent nursing and I was able to hire the people I wanted, and then they would reach out and they would say, hey, you want to come work for this family? And yeah, our nurses are definitely family. And
do you still see?
Yeah, some? we at Grace's year, 1 year of her passing, we did a get together with all of her nurses. And yeah, we definitely could not have we couldn't have taken care of her without our nurses.
Were they there overnight?
At the very beginning, they were there overnight. Once we started independent nursing care, it was like she was starting to sleep through the night at that point, and it was kind of pointless to have somebody. So we had this.
What do you mean independent nursing care, so aside from?
They're not part of like a nursing company.
Okay.
I hire them.
Okay.
You just who pays for random. These nurses?
So Grace was on the Katie Beckett program, and then the state pays for the nurses. Okay. But again, that's a whole nother story dealing with all of that, you know, insurance.
And yeah.
Stuff is hard. But so at the end, I mean, our nurses were amazing. And
they went to school with Grace.
Yep. They went to school with Grace. Grace could not go to school unless she had a nurse. We needed somebody there always, you know, somebody always had to be with her in case, you know, her trach got blocked or whatever.
Because of the trach.
Yeah. Yeah. So she went to school. So some of the things, like, we've talked a lot about, like, all of the things, but school is, like, Grace's favorite.
I was just going to say, what were some of her favorite things?
Yeah. So her favorite was definitely school. She loved, like, she always just, like, took it all in. She wasn't able to speak, but, you know, she had, like, a really good sense of humor. And you just know this by, like, looking at her eyes and you say something and she would laugh. Or, you know, I have videos of her, like, in 4K, and these two little girls have these braids and they're, like, following Grace's face, and they're telling Grace to, like, push her button, which is a way of, like, making this toy move talking sort of. Mm-hmm. And they were saying, "Push your button, Grace." And Grace just, like, looked at them and started cracking up. You know, it's just all of the school things. She loved school. Yeah, it was her favorite, for sure.
Not necessarily like it was more about, like, being around her peers.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It was about being around her peers and just being. It was her time where she wasn't around her parents. Like, it was her time where the only time where she got to, you know, just be with other kids. You know,
when she did cheer.
Yep. And then we got her into adaptive cheer, which I feel like was, like, great for me. Like, oh my gosh, I'm a mom and I get to watch her do this sport. And she went to competitions and did her cheer. And I mean, I think she enjoyed it as much as I did.
Okay.
And she was, like, the whole team was kids with different abilities. And that was fun. It got hard towards the end, and then we stopped with COVID which actually was like a relief for me because it was really difficult to get her to the competitions and to get her. It just took so much to go anywhere because we needed all of the things, and lifting was getting harder, and, you know, all of the things that come along with, you know, taking care of someone. So,
Cause Grace was in a wheelchair.
Right. She used a wheelchair. She had a G tube, her trach. She was on a ventilator only at night just to kind of help for breathing. So you would think of it as like a CPAP or a BiPAP machine. So she used, like, all of those things, like, to help her. But yeah, so she went to school with her nurses and then came home, and sometimes we had night nurses.
What is that like, having people in your house all the time?
Especially people ask me that a lot.
Yeah. How do you have any privacy to just be a family?
It's hard, especially when we had, like, the agencies and we didn't really know these people and they weren't great.
Yeah.
But once we started having the independent nursing, like, they really just became family. And like, you know, it was just our normal. Yeah. We didn't really know any different, I guess. Mm-hmm. And the people who came in, you know, like, sometimes it was like they were taking care of Grace and I was taking care of the boys, and they would stay home with Grace and I would take the boys somewhere, or we would all go together and they would help with Grace. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of like
just normal.
Another person in the family, like another mom, you know, almost another mom, or, you know, some of them. And we just kind of, that's just what we did. And our house is quiet.
I was going to ask. Yeah.
What were some of your favorite things to do with Grace? You said cheer. Was there anything else that you just...
I rocked her every single night. So if we didn't have a respite care worker helping to put her to sleep at night, I rocked her every single night. So, you know, that was my favorite thing is just snuggling with
even
her.
Even when she was how old?
13.
Yeah. I actually think of you sometimes when I rock Jude to sleep at night because he's about to turn 3. And I think some people would be like, really, you're still rocking your 3-year-old to sleep?
No way.
Yes, I am. And I might do it when he's 13.
Keep doing it.
It's really precious moments.
Yeah, it's different. You know, with the boys, they grow up and they do all their things. And I still get hugs and all that from them. But, you know, Grace needed her mom all the time. And I feel like that's one of the biggest changes since she's passed. You know, that was my whole life is taking care of her.
And
my whole life is making sure she had what she needed and that she had the best life. And the thing I'm the most proud of is that I gave her the best life I possibly could. And
you gave her a beautiful life, Amanda. You and Bo and your whole family. She was a very lucky girl.
She was. Yeah. So loved by so many people. And even like, you know, people we don't know, like who I hear stories from about how like Grace has made an impact in their lives. And it's one of the reasons now that I want to just keep sharing about her because I want people to know her. And now I'm having people come to my life and new friendships and they've never met her. And it's just so different. And that was another hard thing is friendships were super hard with not being able to leave the house.
Sure.
You know, we couldn't.
Did you feel like you found time for yourself to go out with friends and while Grace was?
I think I tried, you know, I tried, but it was hard, you know, leaving her.
Yeah. It's probably a different level of mom guilt.
Yeah. I mean, when we had nurses we really trusted, I could leave and I could go to the boys hockey games and I could go to the tournaments.
But what about like out with your girlfriends for a drink or like,
I feel like that didn't really happen. Like my best friend, she will never know how much she means to me, but she just started showing up. She just, she lives down the street from me and she just walked into my house one day and and she just kept coming over.
Yeah.
She was never invited.
Those are like the best kind of friends.
Oh, yeah. And she just knew that's what I needed. And she just would walk in and sit down and we'd have a drink. And then all of a sudden her husband was there and then her kid was there. And we're best friends and our boys are best friends. And we're in hockey together. And if I didn't have her.
Do you want to say your name?
Yeah, Steph. She knows. But
thanks for taking care of Amanda.
Yeah,
Steph.
She's the best. And, you know, there's other people, too, you know, at school who've been there. But Steph just showed up and came in and sat down and I could never really get rid of her. And she, so, yeah, she's the best. And she's still there now. And she's also a nurse. So, like, being a part of, she wasn't Grace's nurse, but she was, you know, she's a nurse at the UW. And she she just knew what Grace needed to, you know, and wasn't scared by all of it. And she just,
Do you find that people were,
they
just didn't know what to do?
Yeah. Or, you know, a lot of, and they, it's.
What would you say to those people that are standing back that don't know what to do when they are around someone that appears
especially
different?
Like strangers. And I mean, I guess I just saw something one time that said, just like, say hello. And I try to teach my students that too. Like when we're walking in the hallway and there's a child who is different than them, I'm like, oh, that's so-and-so, say hi, you know, try to teach them that just say hello. 'Cause that means so much. And don't be afraid to ask questions. You know, we always love talking about Grace and that's a way to teach about her. So don't be afraid to ask questions and, you know,
Even
if they can't, right. And to teach your kids, like I'll never forget a time where a little girl was staring at Grace and her mom's like, stop staring. And I'm like, no, you can say hi, you know, trying to teach parents too. Like they're so worried about what they're, you know, the kids are curious. And that's the time where you like, it's the perfect teaching moment. Teach your child about kids that are different than them. So I feel like as a teacher, I really try to do that. And whenever I have kids with special needs in my classroom, like I feel like I am an advocate for them, like I was for Grace. Yeah.
You always were such an amazing advocate for her.
Yes.
How do you think that Grace's life impacted your sons since they are younger than her?
Yeah. They, you know, it's funny that they just grew up with this life. They've never known anything different besides their sister. And they didn't know anything different than people constantly coming in the house like, oh, here's so-and-so. Like sometimes people that come in and they don't, you know, they don't even say hi to them.
Oh, there's a stranger in my house. It's, whatever.
Oh, here they are. So they've just really grew up with that and they didn't know any different. And they tried to include her in ways. I have videos of like when the boys were little and trying to, you know, we tried to teach them how you can interact with her and they just did, you know? And so
how is it now? Do they talk about her? Do they ask about what?
They're both very different. So leading up, to Grace's passing, you know, we were all there. We all wanted to be there at home with hospice. Mm-hmm. And
the boys were two with her.
The boys were two. Yep. Yep. We didn't really.
Just the four of you with her?
Yes. Yeah. Yep. It was just at that time. We had. So I guess I could back up and just say, like, leading up to what happened was that it came down to Grace's kidneys. That's, you know, she continued to try to balance her kidneys, and we did for 13 years. But at that point, it got to the point where I started to know, like, things were changing in her a little bit, and her labs, we got labs done a lot, they were changing, and I was pretty good at reading them, and something in me just said, like, we're at the end.
You knew.
Yeah.
But before anyone told you.
Do kids with Emanuel syndrome have a shorter lifespan? Because this was not Emanuel syndrome. This was the kidneys from her first surgery.
Right. So, I mean, some do. There's other kids who have passed, but there's other adults that are in their 40s. Really,
so this should not have happened.
No.
And she couldn't have been put on dialysis or get a kidney transplant.
We had choices that we had to make. Kidney transplant really wasn't probably going to work. I mean, the recovery for her with all of the other illnesses and stuff, the doctors just felt like that's just not.
It would have been too
much. It would have been too much for her.
Okay.
We would have done it for nothing.
Okay.
Dialysis was definitely a choice. We could have done dialysis, but do we really want her quality of life to be, you are hooked up to this machine this many hours of the day?
The rest of your life.
The rest of your life. Like, and I mean, it's hard because you don't want to think about yourself. You want to make I wanted to make a decision for her, but that is a lot on us too. And I don't, I didn't want her to be, I wanted her to be able to go to school and do all the things. And I didn't want her to be hooked up to that.
And I mean, I like that you are honest with the fact that you made the decision for her, but it was going to be you doing it.
It would impact, like, our whole
family.
You
have to be honest about that, right? I mean,
yeah. So leading up to,
I mean, how many hours a day does dialysis?
I mean, I don't even know. I think you can do it overnight and stuff, but I'm not sure.
I do think it's like 8 to 12 though. Yeah. Like Ben's stepdad was on dialysis and he was hooked up at night, but it's a lot.
Yeah.
So how long did you have with her? Sort of knowing you were at the end.
She started having like some illnesses and stuff, and we were just really struggling with managing the medication and her kidneys and keeping everything balanced. And the thing with your kidneys is, like, you know, that's what gets rid of fluid, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she needs more fluid. Ugh. Your kidneys need fluid because that's what they need, but too much they can't handle. So she would continue to get like puffy and have edema and be uncomfortable because of that. So then we'd have to try to get that fluid off. Well, the medication Lasix to get the fluid off, it hurts the kidneys. It was like a double-edged sword. So it was really trying to balance it. And I know, like, it was right around this time the boys were going to a hockey tournament in Rhinelander. I wanted to be there. she wasn't doing the best, but her nurses were there and her blood pressure was all off and stuff too. And I remember on the way there, the nurse saying, you know, her blood pressure is really low. Mm-hmm. And so we called the doctor. They said, you know, continue these things. And, you know, obviously we're in touch and I'm like, okay, I'm still going to go to this tournament. She's with a nurse that I trust.
The nurse and Grace were going to stay home.
Yes. And we were going to Rhinelander. The tournament was, we were having a good time, you know, the tournament. Sunday morning, I got a call and the nurse said, Amanda, her blood pressure is so low. Like we have to call an ambulance. And so at that point, that's when I knew.
How far away is Rhinelander?
Did they call an ambulance?
The nurse called the ambulance. The nurse rode in the ambulance with her.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And Rhinelander's, I want to say it's like 2-ish hours.
So you've got 2 hours now to
And then of course there was an ice storm. So it was like,
oh my gosh,
just trying to get home to her. But you know, it's so hard because I want to be there for Grace, but then I need to be there with the boys.
And I can't imagine.
You're torn.
So Brady was going into, I don't know, it might have been the championship game that day or whatever important game it was. And I was driving home. I think Finley, I can't remember.
Which
Finley
must
might
have been
come
a really hard decision for Bo, too.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
To be not together.
Right.
And to not know, like, am I going to make it home?
Yeah. So
were you worried you might not make it home at that?
No. Okay. It wasn't to the point where this was like life or death yet. It was just that her blood pressure was really low and she was possibly going into septic shock, which we had dealt with before. Mm-hmm. So by the time I got to the hospital, her nurse was there. She was in, I think she was in the ICU at that point, but she was fine. I mean, Grace never falls.
Amazing Grace. We call her this for a reason.
And the doctors always said, like, Grace always has her own plan. Like, we can try to do our things, but she's going to make her own plan. She always breaks the rules, as the doctors always said.
Little rebel.
So, So, you know, we got her through that and then she was fine, but she really wasn't fine. Like, and that's at the point where we started talking. Palliative care. Mm-hmm. She was already in a complex care clinic, which the doctors, palliative care is part of that. Mm-hmm. I never was comfortable talking to them because to me, like, palliative care leads to hospice, but that's not really how it works. Like, palliative care is there to make your life better. But we started talking to them and then we brought in hospice and then we started talking to them. It was at that point we decided, I think she came home and then we tried to, you know, we're going to try to manage it a little bit more. And then I remember calling the doctor and saying, we have to come back. Like, she's not doing well. She's, you know, so we went back to the hospital and at that point we knew, like, this is going to be our last hospital stay. Like, we're done. Yeah. We're done. And we're done. We had to make that decision and we're going to come home when we're going to do hospice and we're, you know, we still did, like, it wasn't the end of the end. We didn't stop meds. We kept doing the meds.
Yeah.
It was more of like keeping her comfortable. Okay. I mean, not even keeping her comfortable yet. Cause when she came home, she was still doing okay.
Yeah. Was she still going to school?
No, at this point, she's not going to school anymore. And I wasn't working anymore. Okay. I left and took a leave of absence to be with her, especially like when she went into hospice. But she was in hospice for like 6 months. Like, it wasn't like we're going to hospice and that's the end. So we continued to do like blood draws to like watch her labs. Mm-hmm. And then
why still do all those things?
Right. So we were still like doing those things because we could still manage like her edema and things with like
to keep her comfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She had a port. So at that point where we could draw labs off of it. So it wasn't super uncomfortable for her. So we were kind of watching it that way, but then it got to the point where, and we had all of the meds in the house. Like, we had the pain meds in the house. We had everything set. So the day that things were going to not be good, we had everything
you
we
were
needed.
Ready for her.
And hospice was coming, I mean, like once a week. And then they're like, she's doing really well. Like, we probably don't need to come every week. So then we'd kind of check in like a little less with them. And, but then it got to the point where she was getting worse. And then they started coming in more. And
did Bo take a leave of absence as well?
He did not. So Bo was at that point working from home. So he was a FIAT teacher. And then he switched to working from home so that he could be home if we didn't have a nurse to take care of Grace.
So he left teaching.
He left teaching.
Because Grace's needs needed to be met.
Right.
Yeah.
And I stayed in teaching.
That is not uncommon.
Right.
Like for families. Do you agree?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, we had to do something. Well, we can't. First of all, two teacher salaries is near impossible.
Right.
And then, you know, having, when we don't have a nurse and one of us has to stay home, like somebody has to be there. So he,
we know what he found a
stay at home job, which thank goodness for that.
Right. So he was technically home, but still working during this time. And we had planned that he wasn't going to take off until like it was towards, we knew it was towards the end. Because Grace, you know, she's still trucking along.
She's
breaking the rules like usual. But then it got to the point where we knew that like we can't really manage this anymore. And so hospice came in more, and then we had the whole conversation about, at that point she was on her ventilator 100% of the time.
So then did you start stopping some of those things?
Because of the edema and stuff.
Yeah.
She just, I mean, her lungs were filling up with, it was just, you know, hard for her to breathe.
Was it to like make that,
like, how do you make those
decision for your child? I can't.
I think we knew. I think honestly,
like Grace told you.
Honestly, from day one, I was preparing for Grace to die from day one.
Yeah.
I was, then we took her home and enjoyed the time with her. I think I was always preparing for, when is it going to happen? When is this day coming?
I mean, even before day one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So really talk about anticipatory grief. It was literally like her whole life.
Yeah, it was. It was her whole life. Is this the time that she's not going to come home?
Yeah.
And I was really, I was really good at hiding all of it. And being strong, and nobody really knew. I was like, you know, felt any of that because I didn't share that with anyone. I mean, not even Bo really knew that I felt like that, but it was her whole life waiting for when is this day going to come for 13 years?
Yeah. What did it feel like when it happened?
So the hospice nurse was there and we talked about like this, we are going to have to make this decision, you know, when are you have, you know, she's just getting worse. She's getting more uncomfortable. And that's the thing. I knew when it was time because she was crying and I didn't, I'm not going to have her be in pain. That's my whole thing. We ended up having our pastor come and the grandparents came and we did like kind of her last rites. And we actually did that twice because the first time we thought it was going
to
be,
would get to do that
then
twice.
She got better. So
breaking more rules.
But when it was the last time they came, and
did anyone else come kind of towards the end?
A couple of her nurses did come towards the end, but then we knew that the next day. So the grandparents were there. Our pastor, we did all of our things. At that point, Grace was on pain meds. She was getting pain meds and to keep her comfortable. And then we decided we didn't want anyone else there. We didn't want even the grandparents there. We wanted them to walk away seeing Grace, you know, the way she was.
How many days before?
So that was the day before. The next day was the day when hospice was coming. Grace's doctor from the UW came. Her complex care doctor came and sat with us. And then, you know, the hospice nurse was there. And then also another lady from hospice who really was there to like support us and the boys, like just like mentally and what to expect. So 8 o'clock that morning came, the boys slept in her room that night and we had like a little sleepover. They slept in there and the dog slept in there and we all, you know, were together. The next morning it was like 8 a.m. and at this point, the day before, like the day that we did, like
people saw her
the last rites and stuff, she was like smiling and laughing. And I'm like, we had already planned that the next day was going to be when we were taking her off her ventilator. And I'm like, I can't do this if she is smiling and laughing. But that night, she had a really hard night. She slept the whole night through. And the next morning, I had to give her more pain meds the day that we were going to take her off. And that's how I knew, like, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, she doesn't need to do this
for
anymore.
Her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we, you know, and then the doctors, we talked and they were like, you know, we'll turn the ventilator off. And I wanted to do that because I always took her off her ventilator. It wasn't like a ventilator for us wasn't the end of life it is in the hospital. She always was on a ventilator, you know? So, so I turned it off and we all sat around her on the couch and, you know, we didn't know how long it was going to be. And so we were talking to her and it's like hours passing, hours passing, hours passing, hours passing. You know, you don't want to leave because you don't want to be there. Something happens. Right. And the hospice nurses were playing games with the boys and, you know,
how were the boys, were they like, did you say like Grace is about to die? Like, what did you say?
So we had talked to them before when she came home from the hospital and told them this, Grace isn't going to the hospital anymore. Like, we're going to keep her home and we're going to love her here and take care of her here. And, you know, hospice talked to them about that too.
Okay. Then did you say like, Grace is going to go to heaven or Grace like what words did you use with them? Cause they're elementary age.
Right. Yep. So we talked to them about that she would be in heaven and that she doesn't have any pain and how great will it be because Grace will be able to walk and she'll be able to talk and, you know, her great grandma's in heaven and her great grandpas are in heaven and her uncle and she'll have so many people that, you know, will get to meet her for the first time. And her great grandma was so special in her life and did get to, you know, obviously meet her and hold her. So we told them like tomorrow we're going to take her ventilator off and she will be asleep. And we reassured them that it wasn't going to be scary. And that was my main thing too. It wasn't at all.
Sometimes the form body does weird things.
No, it wasn't at all. She was asleep the whole time and peaceful and like the hospice nurses were amazing. Just the whole day. So angel. She made it through the first day and night. The night was horrible. I mean, she was fine. It was just horrible like
for you guys,
because I didn't want to fall asleep. But then the next day came and it was a beautiful day and we took her out on the deck and
she loved being outside.
Oh, she loved being outside. She loved bubbles and music and being outside. And so we sat out on the deck and then our pastor called and said, "Hey, I'm in the area." He came over. We all sat on the deck with her. And at this point we're like, okay, the boys are kind of getting antsy because they're like wanting, you know, they're
you
boys
send them to school.
And it was the summer.
Okay.
It was summer. Yeah. It was summer. So it was kind of like, okay, they need to do something. So we're like, Grandma Kathy said, "I'll take the boys, you know, I'll take them overnight or whatever." And I'm like, "Yeah, that's fine." You know, because even if I'm, you know, they said their goodbyes, but they both rocked her. And, you know, I think in the end, it turned out to be the best. That night, the hospice nurses switched and Grace's breathing had changed. But it had changed earlier on and the hospice nurse was like, "Okay, this is the kind of breathing that we usually see like this many hours." Well, of course, Grace kept going. But then it kind of changed again. The boys weren't there anymore. And it was like, you know, around 7 o'clock and Bo and I were, you know, next to her and she, you could just tell. And then it was like, she was gone. And I think it was so surreal that I don't even think I cried at first. Like, it was just like, okay. Like, I was waiting for this moment. And so then.
So it was just the three of you.
Just the three of us. Out on the couch and snuggling. And it was so peaceful.
How long did
you sit? We sat for a little while. And then the hospice nurses kind of told us, like, what would happen next. And then. We took her in her room and we like gave her a bath and I dressed her in her comfy PJs and you know, the hardest part, and I think the hardest thing that I was dreading was when the funeral home came. I knew that I didn't want after this anyone to see her. Not, you know, alive. And I knew that this was gonna be the last time I got to see her. Because I didn't know how I could do this once and then have to go to the funeral home and see her again and walk away. I knew this was going to be the one time that I saw her. And I don't know. I just couldn't do that. So, you know, we cleaned her up and I put a bow in her hair and she was in her cute jammies and, you know, the funeral home came and talked to us and I wanted to carry her out because I always carried her. And so I carried her out and laid her down and tucked her in with her blanket and her pillow and, you know, walking away. That was the hardest.
Yeah.
Knowing I was never going to be able to feel her again.
Yeah. Do you feel her still?
Sometimes I do.
Like, has she sent you messages?
I feel like she has through different things. Thank you.
We're all just crying, everyone. Of course.
You know, there's songs that will come on that I don't expect, like when I'm doing a workout or something, and it's just random songs that come on. Those songs will come on. And I feel like right after she passed, I was watering the flowers, and there's like this little green tree frog that I've never seen around our house before. Mm-hmm. There's other people who've sent me, you know, different things that have happened to them. We've had this cardinal that lives like in our backyard now. I'm just like waiting for her to come to my dreams. Like, waiting.
Yeah. She actually has visited me once in a dream and like gave me this hug. And it is just like, it felt so peaceful to me to know that she was just happy.
Yeah. And she's funny because she's visited like one of her other teachers too. Yeah. And she said, like, I just wanted to tell you this because she walked into the room and she was like, it was like she was dancing when she walked in and her voice. And I'm like, and I just, so sometimes I'm mad at her because I'm why are you not visiting me?
Do you remember your dreams?
Sometimes.
Okay.
I mean, sometimes I feel like I've had dreams before when she was alive of her like walking and talking and all that. Yeah. So I just like really have expected that to happen and it hasn't yet. And I'm like,
have you ever gone to a medium or do you believe in?
Yeah, I do believe in that. And actually Kathy, my mother-in-law and I went, not since Grace has passed, but we went to John Edwards, in a thing. Yeah. So, which was really cool. And I want, like, I think I want to like look into that again.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
Maybe if for that medium to come to your house
right.
and be with your family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just that would feel be a Grace's great presence there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you feel like your husband feels her? And
I think so. I think in our family, me and Finley are the ones who talk about her the most and her grandparents. But, you know, Finley, I don't know. He had a really big bond with her, I feel like. Okay. Brady's just more quiet and Beau's more quiet. They're both quiet in that way. But yeah, there's definitely things that have happened. We were traveling and we walk in to a restaurant and, you know, it was a bathroom emergency, of course. And we weren't there to eat. We were just going to use the bathroom and leave. Mm-hmm. And as I'm walking, there's a girl in a wheelchair with a trach. And I'm like, oh. And so I had to, of course, go up and say hi to them. Well, Beau, in the meantime, had seen this too. And was like, I just paid for their whole meal. Like, their meal's covered. Oh. And like anything, you know, that. And he's like, can you believe that? Can you believe? So he's quieter about it, but definitely things have happened to him too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How long has it been since Grace has passed away?
So she passed on July 30th, it's been a year and a half.
Okay.
No. Yes.
What are some things that you've done to kind of carry on her legacy?
You know, it's after she passed, it was just so weird. Like, our house is so quiet. There were so many machines and people and all of that just kind of stopped. So it took us a while to get used to all of that.
Because it literally just stopped one day.
Right.
Like, that has to be so
And it was like
drastic.
The next day that, right after, it was even before her funeral, the medical company's like, all right, we're coming to pick all of the stuff up. And I'm like, wait a second. Like, I haven't
To process. Yeah. Right.
But, you know, I knew right away after she passed that I don't want this. My biggest fear would be that, like, nobody talked about her anymore. And
So it feels good.
It feels good when people talk about her and when people tell me, oh, I thought about Grace. You know, like, I think people, you know, don't know how to act around you because you're grieving and they don't want to make you sad, but it's never going to make me sad to talk about Grace. I'm,
you might cry, but.
Right. And I think it was hard because it happened in July. And then, you know, then our birthdays come up in September. Yeah. Mine's September 4th and Grace's September 7th. So that was hard. Some of our friends had planned a tournament, a hockey tournament, Goals for Grace. That was the first Goals for Grace tournament. That was awesome. I mean, a way to remember her.
Have there been two of those now?
Yep. So we had a second one. The money, the first one went to Give Kids the World, which is where we took Grace on our Make-A-Wish trip.
Okay.
This second one, some of the money is going to the McFarland American Legion, which a neighbor of ours is the commander, I believe that's what you call it, there. And he is, his last like idea was to have a play, like a place for kids to play when they're there. And so that's going to be dedicated to Grace and another girl in our community that had passed away. So the money is going to that. And then it's also going to go to her scholarship fund so we can continue to give scholarships. So that's another thing we did then is we are doing a scholarship, the McFarland Education Foundation and the scholarship, Grace's scholarship. We don't get to pick the person, but they pick somebody who matches like the qualities we look for. Mm-hmm. And so we've chosen to give the scholarship to someone who has shown compassion for somebody with different abilities.
Oh, I love that.
Yep. So the first one went to a student who his daughter is in a wheelchair and is in our district. So that was really cool. So this will be the second time we give away. But now that it's we've raised this money, we'll be able to give more away because it was just like...
And you and Bo get to give...
We get to present the scholarship. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So between the Goals for Grace and the scholarship, and then the next step really is like what I kind of talked about at the beginning of the show was just like, what do we do with Grace's things? And so we've been able to like give those things away to people who have kids and they're using them and then they send me pictures of it. And that's just like that part brings me a lot of peace too. And
Yeah.
I mean, looking back on all of this, there is not like a single regret I have. You know, I gave her the best life I could. I always made decisions and on, you know, what is best for her. I put myself to the side for many, many years to take care of her and I wouldn't have had it any other way, you know, and I'm so thankful that when I said to God, you know, whatever, that he gave me her.
Like, for 13 you know, years.
When you think at first that this diagnosis is the worst thing and gosh, it's just the best thing that ever happened to me. So, yeah.
I love that. I love that too, Amanda. And it seems like the perfect ending to this episode. We do always end up with a quote though. And I know you have one on your arm to share with us.
Yes. So I got a tattoo. Actually, it was a year ago, like yesterday.
Wow.
And it has Grace's name with angel wings. And my quote is, I am because you were.
Thank you for listening and being a part of our community. Please follow us on Facebook and Instagram.
If you'd like to connect, we can be reached at podcastfromtheretohere@gmail.com.
We hope you continue on this journey with us.